Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing.
Oh, mate. G'day, buddy.
Oh, wait, what a big week.
Oh, I know. Collingwood got beaten.
What? Yep.
And our 120th anniversary. It was a great weekend, really. We got beaten in the ones and the twos.
Well, we're not going to talk too much footy other than to say, never in history has there ever been a round where everyone who was below their opponent on the ladder, they beat the person above. So that's it. Just saying. Well, there you go. Should have put that in Did You Know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my tips were all over the shop.
Oh, yeah. If anyone tipped well this week, they are dreamers.
Genius. Or they just had the away team. Maybe they got a few that way.
Yeah. Anyway. Hey, an apology this week, Ben. We are not going to have any...
Right.
We're not going to have any downloads this week, are we?
Because I've got a written warning.
No, different apology. Different apology.
Oh, not
that. There's going to be no resources, no file downloads, no nothing at the end of this episode, because she gave you that look about two minutes ago to say, don't even think about getting me to prepare another resource today like you did last week when you gave me 17 to do.
She's going on holidays and she's done enough.
I know. So,
but what about the other apology?
Well, maybe she should do it.
I know. Can you apologise to our listeners, Ivis?
Yeah.
What happened to our website?
Oh, she's going red, folks. She doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. She doesn't talk, but I can describe what's going on here. Just picture red cheeks.
If you put the sound up really loud, you can hear her giggling in the background. It wasn't a giggle for us.
How interesting. If we push stop on record, she'd have so much to say.
Yeah, she's probably going to edit all this out anyway.
I know. No, she better not. But we got to apologise, Ben, for...
The site went down. Mm. So we had an upgrade at our VPN... VPS upgrade to.
Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah. So anyway, and then that pinged our wrong server spot and domain name, and I don't know. So
hopefully we're up again. So we do apologise for all of those people if you missed the show. Exactly. It's back. But obviously they've got plenty to listen to this week. That's the positive, isn't
yes.
it?
Because this week, it's very exciting, isn't it, mate?
Mm.
Budget week.
We've got to talk about that.
We do.
But before we get the mindset minute, hey, you pinged me a note the other day.
Did I?
Yeah.
Was it a good one?
Well, it was one of your better ones.
But, nice.
You said, check out Becoming Warren Buffett.
Oh, yes.
How good was that?
It's amazing. Yeah. We don't know whether it's legal that it's on YouTube. That's where I found it. So, look, we don't want to be responsible for that.
You found it flying one of our friends in Qantas.
Well, yeah, I was flying back from Sydney after being on Your Money or Call on Sky News on Monday night. And Tuesday morning I got on a flight and I thought, what am I going to watch? And there was this thing here. Becoming Warren Buffett, what's it called? But
how interesting was that the fact that this guy is currently the third richest, but has been the richest man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how's the bit where he spends next to nothing on his breakfast at McDonald's in the morning? He lives in the same house he bought 40 years ago.
He's only recently upgraded his car because for 20 odd years he drove the same car, has his Coke every morning. Coke in the afternoon.
Yeah, so here's what he said, Ben. His wealth was made by three things.
Mm.
One, living in America.
Yes.
For the great opportunities. Two.
Living in America.
Two, having good genes, so he lived a long time.
Yes.
And three, compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
They're the three things he said are the reasons for his wealth. So the reason I say that is in the face of budget headwinds, mm-hmm. in the face of... what's happening to us with all of the changes, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about today.
Winter is coming.
Some of the government's definitely putting the handbrake on property investors. 99% of his wealth was made after his 50th birthday. Birthday?
Yeah, you're talking like me.
So 99% of his wealth was...
Then your hearing's gone. Your voice is gone.
Oh, well, we're starting.
Should we start this again?
He played the long game and he won very, very well. So,
and he's going to donate 99% of his wealth.
Yes. Well, he donated $37.3 billion to the Bill and Melinda Gates. So this guy is just...
Yes.
All his wealth was just a scoreboard. He just did not live the trappings of life. But the access to such a bright mind and someone who's like that... You wouldn't have got access to any of the other billionaires, in my view, to hear that person's life story and him to contribute to it. It was almost an autobiography.
Very much. I mean, it was a journey of going from, you know, money and wealth to more societal sort of appeal and helping others. So he's grown as a, and I think that's probably the message that he wanted to share, that, you know, the type of person he was as a kid and being a millionaire was really important to him. And then all of a sudden over the journey, and obviously through the benefit of his wife, who opened his eyes up to social issues and all that, the whole thing shifted. You know, and now, yeah, he's just a stalwart for making sure America and the rest of the world is well looked after.
So the core thing for the documentary was his value system. Remember when he had to bat his way out of that terrible issue with the financial... It was all value-centred, mate. Yeah. So I'm going to embarrass you. I reckon there's a bit of you in him. Or him and you.
Well, okay.
Because, mate, everything you do is value-centred. I've never heard you talk about a client in a negative light, ever. Like, whenever I've been on a plane, we've had a long day, we've done a presentation, you know, when you're tired at the end of the day, never once have I heard you deviate from that, ever. And here's something interesting. Despite his 11-figure fortune, he earns $100,000 a year and lives very frugally. And, mate, I have to... Like, the other day I was like, mate, you've got to put your income up. You know, Ben is pulls a very low salary compared to the responsibility that he has in this business. So, mate, you're value-centered. You've got some similarities to him. You've got the compounding mantra as part of your DNA. So,
all right, look,
can I call you Warren?
No,
is that all right?
It's very kind of you to say that. I didn't know you were going to say that.
But I know you didn't, because you didn't say anything for the first time, which is not like you on this podcast.
Well, let's talk about something else.
So I'm going to round this off by and that's another thing of Ben. He's Captain Humble. So the quote here is, "Only buy something that you'd be perfectly happy to hold if the market shut down for 10 years." That's a Warren Buffett quote.
Mm-hmm.
Only buy something you'd be perfectly happy to hold if the market shut down for 10 years, which is why we always say, Ben, that the asset selection is critical.
I think it's a great documentary. Check it out. It's about putting things into perspective. I mean, he admits that his fathering was, you know, he was very focused on what he did all his life. He was there, but he wasn't there. So, you know, I think there is also a message there for all of us, because I'm probably a bit guilty of being there but not there as well sometimes.
Well, the message
in the family.
The core message is not all about the money.
Not all about the money.
Once he's got it. And just a quick one. Joe Kirkwood on Facebook said, "Hi guys, love the show. In relation to the latest positive thinking and useful belief episode that we had a couple of weeks back,
yes,
holding on to worry is like letting someone you despise live rent-free in your head. And a good landlord would never do that."
Oh, that is wonderful.
That's great.
Thanks, so Joe.
Thanks for sending that. We'll get a book over to Joe.
Anyone
who writes into us and we read out to them, read it out on the podcast, obviously we send it out to them. All right, so today, the budget. The elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Let's kick it off with negative gearing remains.
So the two big ticket items, obviously negative gearing and capital gains exemptions, have not been altered in this budget. Obviously, we still know the Labor Party still thinks that that's the big ticket item to destroy values in properties, and they're right. So I think that the Liberal Party do see value in the amount of contribution that investors make into the market. So that's good. I'm still not happy, though. I'm not completely happy. But we'll get into that in a minute. But there, you know, so those two, no changes there, but they've been doing a bit of window tinkering. Dressing, a bit of tinkering on the sides. So obviously the big one is the travel. So obviously for us as borderless investors, we do go and inspect our properties. So from that point of view, no longer will we be able to claim that as the travel deductions are now gone, effective immediately. So, you know, from that point of view...
How are we going to go to the Gold Coast?
So that's obviously, you know, a bit frustrating in the sense that people don't... I mean, this is our business. We've got potentially hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars set aside in our businesses, and we can't go and look at our goods. We can't go and look at our assets. So I think that's a bit disappointing for me.
But the saving is $540 million over the next 4 years. So obviously there was a lot going on there. But I remember when I was on the cruise ship, I think I've said this before, that I was having a drink at the bar and I was talking to this guy, and he was pretty pickled. He was a bit legless. And he comes up to me and we, you know, do the usual, "What do you do? What do you do? What do you do?" And he goes, "Mate, I work for the ATO." I went, "Righto." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm in the rental department."
Yeah,
and he goes, "And we're focused on the amount of claims that people are making for Auden. He goes, the number one place we're targeting is anyone who has above average travel expenses. We're going after them. So, and that was 3 years ago. So it's been on their radar for some time. And it's unfortunately some have spoiled it for the rest.
I reckon it is. I mean, like, ultimately, if you've got a property in, say, Cairns or whatever, and you fly up there, you could probably get away with 2 days.
Yep.
You know, the travel day and then the inspection day, but that's it. But if they're trying for 3 or 4 days because they went back to the property or did whatever they did, that's caused the rest of us to potentially miss out. So, you know, you're up there for 7 days, it should have been 2/7. And even that, obviously, has been too much. So they think that they're going to pick up around $540 million with a bit of window dressing.
I remember the in the past, I've been privy to an investment group that used to say, hey, here's how you maximize it. You fly in on Thursday night, and then you go and have an appointment with the property manager on Friday, and you ask how the property's going, and then you stick around till Monday so that you can then go back to the property manager on Monday morning and say, how did the rental market go over the weekend? And then they say, so what do you do for the 2 days over the weekend? Well, you obviously go to the beach and have a pina colada and all that sort of stuff. So you can see that they were trying to stretch the bounds.
And that's the type of stuff we don't want people to do. At the end of the day, it's a business and treat it as such and everything will look after itself. The other one that's interesting in that, though, is the collection of rent.
Mm.
So I'm still trying to get some clarification on whether my property management fees are now also no longer deductible.
Yeah, the details that I read suggested they are.
Yep.
But what if you've still got a drive to go and collect your rent yourself? That's not deductible.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But your property management fees.
Which, hopefully, that's what I meant.
But there's some grey areas, because if you get someone else to collect your rent, it's deductible. If you go and collect the rent, it costs you a tank of fuel to do it. It's not. So
Well, we've always been a believer, though, to get professional people to handle that for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some Q&A questions we might get to later. That's one of those good ones in terms of, someone was asking us around the 10 hours. So hopefully we can get to that a bit later.
Very good. Depreciation. Depreciation deductions for plant and equipment, such as washing machines and ceiling fans, will only be allowed if the investor actually bought them. That's a significant change, Ben, because unless you've handed over the cash for these depreciable items, you can't depreciate them anymore. Straight away as a budget night. How's the speech therapy? It's worth every cent.
So, on a serious note, what we're talking about here is, again, we need the devils in the details. Yeah. So we're trying to understand. So we've obviously reached out to our good friend Brad Beer from BMT Tax Depreciation Schedules. We were talking to Brad yesterday. He's obviously
on it
because it's a big part of obviously everything that he does as a quantity surveyor.
I've got a number.
It's contagious. So quantity surveyor. So from that point of view, we will... not next week, but the week after, I suspect we'll have Brad on the show.
Yeah.
That's the plan. And we will have more details because right now, the budget is only 48 hours old. So we're still trying to get confirmation on what all of that actually means.
So stay tuned on that one. So also on the principal place of residence, foreign and temporary tax residents will no longer be exempt from capital gains tax on their main residence. And that's existing properties will be grandfathered until the 30th of June 2019. So that'll be interesting to see up until that point.
Mm.
That'll be a bit of a build-up point for people to put some stock on the market, I would have thought.
Yeah, I agree. And then, the other one for the foreign investors is the ghost tax.
Mm.
So obviously the vacant property.
Mm.
So we're going to see that introduced.
That doesn't happen, surely. Sure. Just because there's whole buildings with no sets of lights on o'clock at night.
Lisa Montgomery from... we were talking about that on the show, whereby she was saying that there's houses in her street that are vacant, that just don't have anyone in them. And she thinks that they're owned by...
Where'd she live, Mossman?
I'm not sure. But it's just one of those things where we've got to... I think it's a good thing. I think it's absolutely good that, it's not only housing affordability. If rent is, more rental properties are made available, that's not a bad thing for the marketplace. So from that point of view, if it raises a little bit of revenue and obviously appeases any risk around negative gearing and capital gains, I'm happy for that.
Do you reckon it's an urban myth? Because the thing is designed to improve supply. If it's normal housing, but if it will giving some of these high rises onto the rental market actually change, I'm not convinced myself.
It's come out of Canada. So it was a Canadian initiative whereby in Toronto and, and those places where, you know, they had the same problems. It's a global issue, housing affordability. So from that point of view, it's seemed to have, you know, worked a little bit over there to open up those particular properties for rent. And, you know, we've just got to have a mindset shift to say, I want to rent high-rise apartments. You know,
well, but my point is that if another 2,000 apartments came up in Docklands, is that going to improve the, you know, the supply? Because does everyone want to live in Docklands? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm tangenting there. The other one is obviously the first home super saver scheme. So
yes,
from July 1, you can savers will be able to salary sacrifice extra contributions into. Excuse me, I've got the hiccups. Extra contributions into.
Having a good run.
I am, aren't I? Seriously. Just for professional. Superannuation account above the. Here we go. I'll start again. From July the 1st, savers will be able to salary sacrifice extra contributions into their superannuation account above the compulsory contribution up to a maximum of $30,000 and $15,000 in a single year. They'll be able to withdraw it from the 1st of July 2018 onwards. And this is a deviation from the precedent of just severe financial hardship of getting your cash out.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting that they're allowing these first homeowners to go into a lower tax environment to help accelerate their deposit.
So the naysayers and, you know, the commentators out there will say it's going to increase demand and so it's a bad thing, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's a little bit different this time around. As opposed to a traditional first homeowner's grant, in this particular case, what we're talking about is that grant would have just been automatic and everyone would have just got access to $10,000 or $15,000 or whatever it is. This is basically saying that there's going to be a slow process and potentially a slow build-up. So even though it's effective from 1 July this year and you can do $15,000 each year to a maximum of 30, some people are going to be able to do maybe 5 this year, 8 next year, 4 the year after. So it's not going to have that big lump sum of people coming into the market in any one time. Obviously, on the 1st of July 2018, there'll be people will have $15,000, and then the following year there'll be some that has $30,000, and if they combine that with their partner, that's $60,000. But it's still not $100,000 or $150,000. So, you know, if we're talking about a $600,000 home, it's only 10%. So, you know, the good news is they should also be saving in their own name. And I think it's good. I mean, it's very hard to save for a deposit.
Mm.
That's one of the biggest challenges we've got in terms of getting people into the market. So,
no, I think it's a good thing too.
It's not a bad initiative.
I think it's a good thing. What I don't particularly like is when they, you know, they've got the stamp duty concessions that are coming up here in Victoria. What it does is it creates extra borrowing power for a concentrated group of people at the same period of time, which in my view, puts the prices up.
That does, I agree. So,
but this one here is, you know,
it's a slow boom.
Person one versus person two versus person three will all contribute in different ways, and then they can, you know, so I agree.
So there'll be a little spike in 1st of July for the 15 grand, and there'll be a little spike in the 1st of July 2019 when you have where you have 30, and if you're a couple, you'll have 60. But there'll be others who'll say, oh, I want to do this over 5 years.
Bottom line is you're trying to save money after tax now, and if you're on the top marginal tax rate, you've got 52 cents left to save, whereas under this environment, you've got 85 cents left because it's going into the super environment. So it's a good thing to accelerate deposits.
Yeah, and the modelling that Treasury have done says that it's going to be around 30% benefit or 30% boost in terms you'll get savings boost, an acceleration of your savings by around 30%.
Okay, overseas investors, there was previously applied to all Australian sellers of 2 million plus. They had a withholding tax that was about 10%.
Yes.
Now it's 750. So basically, and it applies to everyone. So you've got to get a clearance certificate for that, which is pretty cool. So it means all in one and then you get it cleared. But here's some things that in the debate. Off the plan, I think that'll make off the plan, just on a side issue, off the plan might be a bit more vulnerable. If that was largely a lot of overseas investors and they're now being disincentivized, that might just pull a little bit more demand out of a market that doesn't need to.
Yep.
But imagine if you have to get a clearance certificate for every house that you sell to get a capital gains tax exemption, you, me, Ibis, everyone. Yeah. And then you haven't filed a tax return for many years. That's going to be a challenge.
Yes.
You haven't filed a tax return, which would indicate that you can afford such a property. That would be a bit of a term. And then a couple of other things. But essentially, that's a change.
Yep. So there's another reduction of demand potentially that's coming into the market. So death by 1,000 cuts, slow the market down slowly. This is another initiative to slow the market down. Now, the consequences of that, however, we've got to understand is if it does slow down construction, then there's going to be some construction jobs that will come off the boil in probably 18 months to 2 years, which was what we talked about, because we've got this flood of new stock coming on the market at this time. So we've just got to be mindful that we want everyone gainfully employed. So if we start to see a slowdown because we're trying to make housing affordable for 20% of the marketplace, these are some of the consequences that could flow on. And then obviously you've got retail jobs, and that could slow the economy down a little bit. So we've just got to be careful there.
Yep, being careful, I like it. Another one for downsizers, Ben, up to 300K for selling their principal place of residence if put into super, if lived in it for more than a decade and they're over 65. So it's a contribution to super at that environment.
Yes.
So what it's in doing is encouraging people with 5-bedroom homes who don't need it to put that supply onto the market and then downsize to a smaller amount whilst getting that tax environment. So,
in principle, I like the idea, but
they've bookend, haven't they? They've got someone for the firsties, they've got someone for the downsizers.
And you may shake the tree and get a few leaves fall, because that's really all that's going to do. Because the reality is, those people in those really high end properties, my understanding of the legislation is going to be that whatever cash is then left over will have to probably go into another principal place of residence home. Because if you actually leave that cash out, that is going to be a part of your pension cost. So your asset base. Means test, thank you, Bryce.
Yeah.
So that'll be means tested, which means that your pension could be gone if you got that in cash.
Ooh.
If you got the rest in cash. Mm. So you'll have to downsize, obviously allocate the rest, but then you're putting $300,000 into super. So I think that's a good idea. It takes the pressure off the pension. So, and potentially opens up some of these beautiful homes for younger people to come in and basically have their families in them.
So there you go, folks. That was a bit for everyone. So as I said, a bookended at the front for the firsties, a bookend at the end for the downsizers. There's something in the middle for the property investors. But mate, we were talking yesterday. What was you thought it was a budget that was designed strategically to
It's a nullifying labour budget. Mm. There's no doubt about it. It's got a bit of higher tax in it. So it's not an exciting budget in terms of cost savings or anything like that. The other thing that we also haven't talked about is the new scheme that they're trying to deliver affordable housing. So they want corporates to get involved in building accommodation for people to live in. So we have seen examples in the UK, and that's obviously, the Treasurer did a research trip over there and came back with that idea. So it's going to be a combination of things that will help with housing affordability. So these community style apartment blocks that are going to be run by superannuation funds or run by bigger end of town corporates, where they can get obviously some revenue and management fees for doing that, but it'll all be attractive for cheaper housing. So I think those types of combinations with obviously everything else is going on, it steps in the right direction. I still think the big gameplay, the one that will solve this problem longer term, is fast transport. Mm. If you can get fast ground transport, whether it be speed trains, which are fast trains, which is what I've been talking about. Now I'm onto this Hyperloop, Hyperloop One. Check it out just Google it, Hyperloop One. You can understand what I'm talking about there. We're talking about these sort of levitating, magnetically driven pods through a vacuum sealed chamber that can travel at 1,200 kilometres an hour. So check it out. It's quite interesting stuff.
If only the listeners could have been at the staff conference on Saturday, yeah. They would have been
got the big vision. Got the big vision statement from me. Yes, about so the world is changing. So yeah, look, I think so. All in all, some of these things have to be passed through the Senate. So I'm sure there'll be the typical Labor's making it difficult because that's the politics of it all. And obviously the budget repair needs to go on, and the Liberals were banging their head up in the Senate. They couldn't get any of those other changes through, so hence we've got what we've got in this particular budget. So it's a bit of a no-frills infrastructure budget, but in reality, next year will probably be a bit more focused as we start to lead into the next election cycle.
And did you breathe a sigh of relief? Because you were worried that the investors were getting bashed up a bit in the lead-up. Did you feel that that budget gave you a bit more of a...
A little bit. I mean, we still got a little bit beaten up again, a bit of window dressing on the edges and those cuts that I keep talking about. The other bank tax or the levy, that absolutely will flow on to us. I mean, I was listening to an interview with the CEO of ANZ a couple of weeks ago after their half-year announcement, I think it was. And he was saying that, the differential in the past, going back into the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, there was a 1% differential between residential owner-occupier mortgages and investor mortgages. Mm. Now, we're at sort of about 30 basis points in some cases. So there's still 70 basis points is where they could. And so we are, you know, we're under attack.
We're in the gun.
We're in the gun. So that's something that we've got to look at. And I also noticed that Scott Morrison announced that APRA will start to get increased powers to look at non-banks, so non-ADIs, so authorised deposit-taking institutions. They'll start to play at the edges, because I always thought there'd be a business opportunity for those people to come in and potentially give sophisticated investors access to cash. Mm. And I still think that that will be a possibility, because there's no doubt that investors will at some point say no, because the actual risk to the bank is still based on the security. And if that security is a good one, they're at no risk at all.
Mm, well said. So there you go, folks. A little bit of a roundup of the budget this week. Joel on Facebook. What if it's our Joel? Hi, Property Couch crew. Since the website is down, I'll throw... Oh, there you go. It's just a nail. Since the website is down, I'll throw my question for the next Q&A here. A good one of the younger generation, first home buyers as well as parents. My question relates to the announcement of the first home buyers savings scheme announced in the budget with the tax break through superannuation. Being someone who has been taught in uni and at home by my parents not to touch my super and add extra payments where possible, is this scheme of accessing it for a house deposit reasonable? I see the tax break being a great idea, but opening the idea of people taking their super to buy a house they can't save for rings alarm bells for me. Do I have the correct understanding of it all? Would you recommend another way? I just want to say that because we covered that a bit, but than it just provides a better savings environment for those people if they are prepared to put more over and above what they're currently doing now. So, but the protection of super, I think, is a good thing.
So we're very clear. This is talking about not your compulsory super. Okay, so correct. Your 9.5%
extra
is locked away. You can't access that. Okay, so make sure you understand that it's only the additional contribution, whether it be salary sacrifice. That's the important piece here. So, Joel, it is a good initiative because it means that your income going in there, your savings into this super saving scheme, is only going to be taxed at 15 cents in the dollar. So as opposed to your marginal tax rate might be a bit higher than that. So the reality is that's where you get that boost. Now on the way out, it's still going to be taxed. And it sort of, you know, but there's also going to be a 30% concession on whatever the margin tax rate of that time is. So there's still going to be, it's going to be taxed a little bit on the way in and a little bit on the way out. But again, the overall numbers that the Treasury have done said there's a 30% boost in how quickly you can save for that deposit. So
you can't touch the farm, Ben. You just can quarantine a little section just correct. For the benefits.
Yeah. And whilst your money's sitting in there, don't forget, guys, it's earning money. So if you're, so we've talked about this before. Don't think super is not your investment. It is. So talk to your industry super or talk to your retail super, your financial advisor, because it's absolutely critical that you have that money in investment returns that you understand, because some of them are in boringly basic returns, and that's right for some with, you know, basic risk profiles, but you can actually have that money invested smarter, because that's what the vehicle is. It's an investment vehicle. So make sure you take an active interest in where your super is, and whether it's in an accumulation, an aggressive fund or a balanced fund, understand it.
Very good. Hey, Leo Burrito. Leo Burrito has written into us, Ben. Hi, Ben and Bryce, and in brackets, the Stig. Hey,
you want to say a shout out to
you? No, don't want to say anything. I cannot thank you enough for the endless amount of value that provide for your listeners. Your content is conversational and easy to understand, despite the fact that you can't put your sentences together. I just threw that in. Even for a first time investor like myself. I have a suggestion that may also benefit other listeners. I have recently purchased my first investment property at 23 years old. It is an existing 3-bed brick and tile property, and I'm in the process of planning a cosmetic renovation. My question is, when refinancing against an existing asset, do all valuers have a set agenda when valuing your property? Since all valuers will have different opinion on price, is there a similar set of factors that they look at? Condition of kitchen, bathroom, flooring, etc. Going on from this, is there ways that you can make your property more appealing to a valuer in order to gain a higher valuation to leverage onto the next investment? Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it, Leo.
Yes, there is. There's a lot that you can do. And yes, there are some situations here that we need to unpack. There's a word I haven't used before.
Ooh,
so let's start firstly. The valuer, if you're going to refinance, the valuer is engaged on behalf of the bank. Now, the valuation that they're giving is for bank purposes. Now, the definition of that would be that if the property needs to be sold quickly, what would be the value that they would expect to get? Because you've got to remember, the valuer is independent of the bank, okay? They work under their own license. They work under their own professional indemnity cover. Now, if you think about it,
that the to be engaged by the bank, the property value that they issue on the valuation has to last for 6 months. Okay, so there is a risk for the value, which naturally means that they are conservative in the way in which they value the property. That doesn't mean that they aren't good or experts. So the first thing I would always ask a valuer when they're coming out, do you value properties in this area all the time? Right, because I want to make sure that the valuer is not an out-of-market valuer, because they will usually be more conservative than someone who values in that marketplace all the time. And then it comes down to, you know, obviously showing the property in the best light. So, Bryce, talk to them.
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do for the valuer is rewind right back to the decision you make on property and make sure you buy a property that's not next to a high-tension power line, not on a main road, not opposite a, you know, an industrial site, because not the way they do a valuation report has market risk, it has environmental risk, it has location risk. They can mark things down a perfectly good property just because it, you know, on a busy set of traffic lights or something like that. So you, the best thing you can do for the valuer is way back when you made the decision about asset selection is to make sure that you give yourself in the bell curve, because it's a human being who is often having to do 8 to 10 of these a day. And so the fantasy that there's heaps that you can do to, because value is a person with a professional reputation, and the more you try and manipulate it, the more likely they try to dig their heels in. As Ben said, they work for someone else, not you. So make sure you get the asset selection right. And then when you then you have a property, it's sometimes these guys drive up, as you know, Ben, and they'll do a curb valuation and drive on. So if you've got great street appeal, that's a good start. And if they walk inside, they need to be able to see that you've spent the money on the things that matter, that add value. Because if you've put a fence that's the best fence that you could put, but it doesn't add any value, it's no good. You know,
a pool.
Wet areas, flow of the floor plan, how different or unique it is compared to every other property. Is it overcapped compared to everything else in the market? So for me, it's rewinding back and thinking through the eyes of a valuer who's a professional, who's make their job easier by saying, well, your property doesn't stand out for the wrong reasons, and I can easily stack up 3 or 4 comps within a kilometre radius of this to make sure I go back to the bank and give you the best valuation I possibly can. Because ultimately, once a valuer has made up their mind, Ben, I've very rarely seen a valuer change their mind.
Correct. So there are a couple of little things that I would say to encourage the valuer and to potentially help the valuer in their process. I would normally have a superior, a comparable, and an inferior valuation of something within, you know, 1 kilometre radius. And don't give me a weatherboard versus a brick. That's crazy. Don't give me a 4-bedroom versus a 3-bedroom plus sunroom, all right? Make sure it's comparable, because that's what you've got to do. You'll be underwhelmed with your result if you've tried to compare a 4-bedroom property that sold 3 weeks ago and yours is a 3-bedroom plus a study nook.
With rose glasses.
And one's two stories and yours is a single story. So obviously land component's good. Bryce also talked about all of those aspects that we talked about. But if you present first impressions are important, make sure the grass is mown, make sure there's a splash of paint on things. The best return on a reno you'll always get is to paint. And then obviously kitchens, bathrooms, that's and those living zones that feel warm and fresh and lots of light. Okay, don't try and be fancy with feature wall colours, because your colour palette might be completely different than the general market. So you get those things right and you should see a better result. But don't you know think you've got fool's gold here by trying to compare your 3-bedroom house that you've just renovated to a 4-bedroom house that's on slightly bigger block in slightly better location overlooking a park and yours isn't. So get your comps right. And then, you know, they'll potentially consider what you're talking about.
Exactly. Buy properties that banks like. So this is the classic, Ben. You know, you've got a 1-bedder and, you know, it's under 50 square metres and someone goes, you know, a broker says, yeah, but I can find a lender who will do that for you. That's not what's important.
No.
Because this is the game time. This is the pointy end. Because anyone who's a serious portfolio builder, you're not going to sell. Your version of selling is sending the value around. Correct. So they come around and they see it's under 50 square metres for a 1-bedder. That's another reason why they would knock it down.
Correct. So even if it looks fresh and tidy, they're still going to have hesitancies because they know that those ones don't perform well because the banks don't have an appetite for them. I've got another one here, which is just to finish off. This one here is what we were talking about before, and I love this question. So it's from Derek. Hi, guys. Something that isn't actually widely discussed in the field of real estate is bookkeeping. You guys mentioned the need to spend 10 hours or so per year to review each property in your portfolio. Can you dive into greater detail as to what exactly this entails? What sorts of information do you need to keep track of, and is it done through a spreadsheet or a specific software, Bryce?
Mate, I use a spreadsheet, mate. Old school me. And you know, I'm minimum effective dose. So I use Dropbox, so I just put everything into Dropbox. My bookkeeper does my best. At the same time, she puts all the details into a spreadsheet, and then using Money Smarts to keep on track of it. Then I have everything up in the cloud for all of my stuff. My bookkeeper puts it in a spreadsheet. I send it to the accountant, along with the QS report, which may change going forward, but along with the QS report. So that's, I keep it really simple.
Yeah, so depreciation schedule is saved electronically for me. In terms of, I've got property managers managing our portfolio, so at the end of each year, you get your end of year statement. And that has all of your rent in there, and I get the property managers to pay the rates and to look after all of that. I mean, that's their job, to look after my property. So they pay all of that. And guess what? That all finds its way onto my statement. So I'm keeping the job really simple because I've got the property manager doing all these pieces of work for me. I get that statement. I can see the repairs that have been done. I can see the rent that's been received. I can see the fees that the property manager have paid me. And so that makes life really easy. I then look at my interest statements, so my loan statements. And on 30 June, when you get your statement, there will be a little calculation down the bottom. In the 14-15 year, the interest paid for this loan was $16,828.48.
Good memory.
I highlight that and I make sure that the accountant sees that. It goes off to the accountant. So that's nice and simple. So there are definitely off-the-shelf products that you can use to sort of manage this. But in my case, I keep it really, really simple.
Because we don't have any time.
No, so I wear the plumbing with a leaky tap. So,
but that's simple. It's effective. It's just, all you need to do is get the information over so you can lodge it in your tax returns. It doesn't matter how you get there. If you've got a nice, fancy piece of software, no problem. Me, I'm on a clunky old spreadsheet, but it just gets the job done.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these days, I mean, look, you know, this is something that our own clients are saying, you know, it would be great if you could help us out with this. So we're just, we're working on a few things.
Mate, behind the scenes, we want to see your highlights reel. When's the highlights reel coming?
It's coming. It's coming. I promise it's coming. So, yes. So that's as simple as it is. Now, obviously, my property manager is to do 2 inspections a year. So I'm expecting to see pictures and I'm expecting to read that report. So if everything else is coming to me and I've got everything else taken care of, that should be the amount of bookkeeping that I need to do. Back to cash flow management. Well, that's where I spend a bit more time in terms of, once I've set it up, I know what my budget is each week to spend. So once that's done, Money Smarts has worked. So hence, it should be relatively easy to look after all of this.
Hands up who hasn't implemented Money Smarts. We'll pause for effect. Right.
Oh, mate, crazy.
Crazy. Go to thepropertycouch.com.au and download it and just do it. Yeah. Like, we've had that many people write into us to say it's a game changer. So just do that. All right, Ben. Today, life hack for me. Coles Delivery.
Coles?
Have you ever done that?
Yep.
Coles Delivery. Mate, Andrew and I have had Coles Delivery turn up at a campsite. True story.
Well, we've had it turn up at Hamilton Island. Ooh. So when we hired an apartment, you get Canning Vale Coles to deliver across on the barge, and you get your supplies for the week on the island.
Coles could be Woolies, but just, mate, for time poor people who, and this is going to hark back to the Money Smarts.
I hope my wife's listening. I keep.
Does she not use it?
Well, no.
Okay.
Sort of.
She doesn't listen to the podcast.
Well, she's tried it a couple of times, but there's a few things she's got, yeah.
Well, the thing is, we don't do it anymore because we don't buy a lot from Coles, but Andrea's found a way to get, she's got someone who runs around and all of these little locations where she buys all of her fruit and veg and her meat, they deliver it. So I'm just saying, take advantage of, and it's cost effective, I've got to say. But where it's most cost effective, no impulse buying. Ben, got your budget, you stick to it, you get the stuff to turn up, there's no impulse buying.
Yep.
I've got young kids, can you imagine what the impulse buying is like? Can I have that? Can I have that?
You stole
my thunder, but we've had it turned up at a campsite, and we've had it turn up, we went to the island off the coast of Brisbane, is Morton Island.
Morton Island, yes.
So we're about to get onto the ship, and the Coles delivery guy turns up, so we got it on the boat, take all of our stuff over there. So all grass, mate. It was freshly cut grass. So that's my life hack, Ben.
I love it.
Take advantage of the outsourcing. Yeah. You know, I love that. Outsourcing,
I do.
Where
I
people
totally
will
agree.
Turn this stuff up to your house.
Yeah.
Not only is it going to give you time back, back, but it'll leave more money in your money smart spend.
Love it. Beautiful.
Did you know?
Did you know, mate? Did you know?
Oh, this will be good.
This is a big one.
Yeah.
So it's sort of leading into budget and to GDP. So Australia, and this is a thanks for Rachel. You know who you are.
Rachel.
Who gave me this little tip was coming out. So within about 50 days' time, we are going to break. Australia is going to break the world record.
Mm-hmm.
The world record for the longest period of no recession.
Wow.
Okay, so recession is two negative quarters of GDP. So this is basically saying that in 50 days, because the reality is our next, we're going to break it because we don't get reported for the quarter until, you know, so we're there.
Yeah.
But in 50 days, that's it. We'll have the world record as the economy that's grown for the longest period of time without a recession.
Wow.
Which is pretty incredible. So it's, I think it's 26 years or just over, just a little bit over 26 years.
No wonder Australian cities are always in the most livable cities in the world. Yeah. That's terrific. You can just imagine, Alan, you know, when we tip over that day, you know, Alan Bond, as he's lifting the Australia too with a wink. We just need to go, yeah. So we made it.
We live in a great country.
Mm,
we're very blessed. We're very blessed.
Oh, mate, that's good. Did you know? There you go, folks. It's almost like, you know, when you're on Brownlow Medal night and someone, you know, as the last round's been called, someone can't lose it. It's like the everyone's giving them pats on the back.
Yes. Yeah. The cameras are going off. Yes. Very true.
So, Alan Bond, get ready. Here we go. All right. So, a couple of things.
You can't see Bryce's body movement. He bends down, raises the
elbow. Come on. The wing keel. So, a quick one for first-time listeners listening to us the first time, Ben, go back to episode one.
Yes, please.
One and a half times, catch up, because it all builds on top of each other. And then, as I mentioned before, there's some free stuff. Go to the money, to thepropertycouch.com.au, get the Money Smarts. There's a few other free things there that I've had to put 17 different downloads last week, which you gave you the evils for this morning. And of course, you're on Your Money, Your Call, so keep an eye out. That's on the Empower website if anyone wants to see
And there's
that.
A little book there too, if anyone's interested.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a little book that we have.
What is it?
The Armchair Guide to Property Investing.
Oh, yeah. That one.
A little book on our website.
Yeah.
There's a little book.
All right.
It's a best-selling book.
It's a best-selling book, so if anyone wants to get their hands on that, I think there's a little discount they can get.
Yes, a little discount as well.
And anyone, where's the people who love to join the conversation, Ben? We want to know who they are. At the Property Couch, at Bryce Holdaway, at Ben Kingsley AU. Come and say good day, introduce yourself, so that'll be cool. All right, mate, we've got through a bit. How'd we get the time?
Yeah.
That's all right. It's not bad for us. But until next week,
see you later.
See you later.